This week, Elon Musk called a Trump aide dumber than a sack of bricks. True or false?
True.
Mike. True.
It is. Do you know who it was?
Peter Navarro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that Elon Musk and I agree on.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with Musk, actually. I think he's dumber than that. Navarro.
That was right there. See, that joke was right there. I'm proud of you, David.
Okay. I think you're guessing where I'm going to go with this. Peter Navarro cited Ron Vara in an anti-China publication, which is an anagram of his own name in his own publication. So he cited himself. True or false?
That's David. True.
I believe it happened. I haven't heard about it, but I believe it did.
It is true. He has used his own name as an anagram.
But he can't find anybody else to cite who agrees with him. It's not surprising.
No one credible anyway.
Yeah.
True or false, he advocated giving out 23 million hydroxychloroquine tablets, the weird stuff that everyone made fun of in the UK during COVID. True or false, Liz?
Oh.
You think he's
true.
Bad?
True.
Mike?
I'll go false just for the sake of the bit, but I don't actually know.
Was that each or cumulative?
Total.
No, I think it's probably true, but it could have been more than that.
Gonna get you on a technicality.
It's true.
It's true. Yeah.
They've only found.
I should know better. I should know better. They're all true.
It's all true. They only found out that it had an effect on COVID in 2024. So last year, September. So he had no idea there would be no clinical trials. He was just advocating it for no reason. And it only affected 50. It only improved conditions by 15%. So minimal. Last question. The UK government this week has proposed a swap deal, one for one, on illegal immigrants crossing from France to Britain and vice versa. So it's an exchange deal with France and Britain. One for one in the term illegal immigrant, which we all call refugees. Mike, do you think the UK government would do that under Labour?
Sure. Yeah, I'll say true.
David?
Well, I saw it reported in a newspaper. Does that make it true?
Just gave it away, Liz.
Depressingly, I've seen it reported. I would more argue that it's impossible, but I'm sure that they would try and do anything to rival Nigel Farage right now.
World we live in, right? Let's just get straight into the show. Welcome, everyone, to the Sunday Roast. We have some excellent guests this week. David, it's been too long. Can you please introduce yourself?
I'm David Hennig. I do trade things, which seems to be quite popular these days. And obviously, it's been a struggle this week. Was I going to be interviewed for some lifestyle features? You know, what the average trade folk are doing these days, or appear on the Sunday Roast? But out of loyalty to the old brand, I thought, you know, skip the front pages. Let's go for the Sunday Roast.
Yeah, much better, much more fun. Mike, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Mike Nellis. I'm a Democratic strategist in America. I've been doing this for two decades now. I'm a former senior advisor to Kamala Harris, and I live in Chicago. And also, it is like 5 in the morning for me right now. So, you know, cut me some slack, guys.
I'm Nirvana. Liz.
Hello, I'm Liz Webster, and thank God it's not 5 in the morning here. We farm in North Wiltshire, and founder of Save British Farming, and totally and utterly triggered by Brexit.
I'm not going to interrupt myself. I'm just going to go straight in. You know what? I know we were going to talk trade with the US, the UK, the EU, tariffs and immigration. But Mike, I've just watched a bit of your debate on Piers Morgan. Mm-hmm. What the fuck? They were spouting. They were lit. I can show you in Mein Kampf the words that he uses that they repeated. I could show you in Nazi newspaper Der Stürmer words that the right wingers were using that they repeated. Invasion, vermin. What were your takeaways from that?
Yeah, well, the invasion stuff makes me uncomfortable, and I think is complete bullshit. And there, I think two things can be true that the right wing in America doesn't want Democrats to say. But the first one is that our immigration policies have been ridiculous in the country for the last couple of years, and we haven't done enough to keep people safe, and we haven't done enough to secure the border. At the same time, we have a lot of people who are trying to come here because they're fleeing extreme violence and extreme poverty, and they're not bad people. And I get very frustrated at, and it's more extreme than this, but it just feels like bullying, right? All they got to do is they got a name call. They're going to call everybody an illegal immigrant. They're going to treat people like shit. When you have a lot of people who are coming here to the United States who are doing jobs that nobody else wants to do, that are the backbone of the American economy, that are keeping grocery prices cheap, and then they're going to attack them. And so a lot of the debate that happened on Piers Morgan this week was between me and, let's say, 3.5 conservatives. We'll give Piers like a half. You know, he was mostly with me on this stuff. But talking about due process, and they've deported a man named Kilmar from Maryland without any due process. They're claiming that he's a member of a gang. They're claiming that he's violent. There appears to be no evidence of that. And most importantly, they haven't faced a judge. And they've sent him to an El Salvadorian prison, which is probably a pretty brutal place to be, given the fact that that man is a dictator. He calls himself the coolest dictator in the world, and he's building prisons for Americans. So I get concerned about the lack of due process, and I'm the first person to tell you I don't want violent criminals in the United States. I want to make sure we're a lot smarter about it, but we can't just be sending people off without due process. And now Donald Trump is talking about sending homegrowns to these prisons. And what is a homegrown? Is a homegrown somebody who tries to steal a loaf of bread? Is a homegrown somebody that's Donald Trump's political enemy? I don't know. So I just think it's a slippery slope. And meanwhile, these guys are, you know, being cold and callous. And, you know, you say, quoting Hitler, I believe you.
I can cite the page.
No, I believe you.
You know,
it's just gross. It's just gross.
But there's a whole heap of crazy going on, as far as I can see. I mean, I'm trying to avoid it as much as I can over here. You don't have that option. But just a whole heap of crazy and a whole heap of nasty going on, as far as I can see. How do you deal with it?
You know, I'm nobody can hurt me. That's just kind of where I'm at. Because I got a job to do to try to. Can I curse on here? I forget.
Yeah, do whatever you want.
I think you did. Yeah.
Right. Oh, I already have. Great. Excellent. So that's believable. I mean, we have to unfuck the Democratic Party, and we have to start winning some elections again. And so I'm you know, nose to the pavement, whatever you want to say. Like I wake up every morning. I am not surprised by anything that they do. The only thing I'm often surprised by is the incompetence of what they're doing. And I'm always just like, God, it's like they can take an issue that is legitimate, pervert it with the language that they use. And then when they try to solve it, they just screw everything up. So like Trump, to a certain degree, is right that America gets screwed on tariffs and manufacturing jobs. And then the implementation of that is ridiculous and stupid and isolates America. On immigration, he's right that we haven't been smart about keeping our borders secure. But then he's got to like demean everybody, and they can't even deport the right people. And then they use language that's, you know, as we've discussed, is disgusting. And then, you know, on DOGE, which is the other big thing that he's doing, where he's trying to cut all this government spending, he's got no problem letting like Elon Musk have billions of dollars in government contracts to build rocket ships that explode. But we don't have money for cancer research for kids or healthcare for people who are in vulnerable situations. So it's all just stupid. It's all just stupid. And I get frustrated by it, but I have a job to do. And a good chunk of my value to the country or to the Democratic Party, whichever you want to say, is that I can kind of shut it out and just do my job.
What are your thoughts, Liz?
So what happens in your system? Because with us, when a party loses and the other party takes over, we still have a shadow leader. So who's actually leading the Democrats now?
We don't have shadow leaders in the United States. You know, I think like our party system, we're much more like a, and I think this is true of the Republicans too, we're a much more like loose coalition of interests than we are like a political party. I think relative right. to, I've done a little international work. So just a little bit different. I mean, Ken Martin is the chair of the Democratic National Committee. He's a very good chair. He got elected about 2 months ago. I like him a lot, but what'll happen here is that the Democrats will be leaderless until we have a presidential nominee. That's what it'll be. And you'll find that in our system and in the way that like Americans respond to things, people will gravitate naturally towards which figures they're interested in. So like, you know, like AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's a congresswoman from New York. She's young, she's charismatic, she's awesome, she's very liberal. I like her very, very much, and I find her to be a great fighter. She's going around the country with Bernie Sanders, senator from Vermont, and they're hosting these big rallies, and you see lots of people coming out. And then, you know, Cory Booker did that. I'm sure you guys saw this 24.5-hour filibuster where he stood and basically like stopped the business of the Senate for a whole day. We're going to find that people are going to naturally gravitate towards the figures that are willing to stand up and say, this is wrong. They're hurting people. I'm going to try to do what I can. Chris Van Hollen is in El Salvador right now trying to bring Kilmar home to his wife and his three kids. And I think that that's what you'll kind of see. And then they'll just be like natural gravitations, but there's not a shadow government. So I think in the UK, right, like sometimes, if not always, there's like a shadow minister of certain things. And We don't really do that here, and especially with the way the
American... I think you should.
Maybe. I have a client who pitched doing it. I didn't think it was a bad idea.
Well, because at least you've got some organization and some decision-making facilities, which is kind of what did happen under Keir Starmer in particular. You know, the Labour Party was a mess in 2019 after that election. But in fairness to Starmer, he did a very impressive job. Perhaps the authoritarian signs then should have alarmed us more, but he did sort out the mess after Jeremy Corbyn, because things were in a significant mess when Johnson took over. And that leadership led to him winning this last election.
Can I put the opposite case, though?
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Badnock.
Yeah.
Well, I know, I haven't got there.
I think some of the challenge, at least in our system, is like, look, we lost. We lost the House, we lost the Senate, we lost the popular vote. And I think to a certain degree, you kind of got to let it's almost like when a little kid touches the stove, you kind of got to let them hurt themselves a little bit, you know? And then we can kind of come in and go, all right, here's how we're going to fix it and here's what we need to do. But like, the Democratic Party is also incredibly unpopular. Like, our approval rating is at like 29% in some polls that I've seen. I've seen it actually a little bit lower than that too. Now, the Republicans are not popular. Like, they're like 35, 40%. So like, nobody likes any politician in the United States right now. Trump is the most popular politician in America, most likely. But his approval rating is tanking because of the economy and because of tariffs. People broadly like his immigration policies, unfortunately. But you kind of got to let, you have to let it play out a little bit. And I think if you just start forming your own shadow government in America, I don't know that that works. And I also think it makes it harder. Because the other thing, we have like 40 candidates that are jockeying to be the next presidential nominee for the Democratic Party. And it's not a clean system. Like, they've got to go travel to 50 states and campaign and be in caucuses and primaries. And so I see a lot of people being like, we should make Mayor Pete, you know, Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary that people love.
I like him. He's good.
I like him too. I was at a fundraiser with him this week. I think he's amazing.
He's a great communicator.
He's a very good communicator. At the same time, if we appointed him like the spokesperson for the Democratic Party, that's deeply unfair to the other, you know, 20 candidates that are also trying to run. So it's like, how do you pick the right person? What's the right role for them? It just becomes kind of complicated. And so you have a lot of distribution of that work.
Can I ask a question while you're on? Let's take advantage. So one of the things I don't think a lot of people get in the UK is state rights. Okay, so, you know, Illinois, presumably you're in, you know, has huge amounts of power and whatever. How's that shaping up right now? With Trump, is clearly Trump and his folk want power over anything they want power over. How is Illinois, which is pretty democratic, I would guess, how is Illinois affected by that? I mean, presumably a lot of stuff kind of carries on as it was before, but there's some stuff you can see. I can see some of the tensions breaking out, but I'm just kind of curious as to how much, I don't know, residents of Chicago can actually be immunized in a way against the kind of what the president is trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, like, my day-to-day life really hasn't changed since Trump was elected. It doesn't mean it won't change, but I'm also like a fairly affluent white man that living in a very liberal city, right? So, I would imagine that there are lots of people whose lives have been impacted, particularly folks that are watching the programs that they rely on get slashed, like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. All this stuff, by the way, I don't know if you follow any of this, that they're basically gutting the communication apparatus for the Social Security Administration and making it impossible for seniors to get help when they need it, which is, in my opinion, a classic example of American politicians wanting government to be run by a business. Because if you've ever had to like call your cell phone company, I don't think you're like, wow, this is so efficient, I'm having a great time. So it's going to be a lot like that. And don't get me wrong, government is also wildly inefficient and needs to be fixed. But, you know, we have a great governor, J.B. Pritzker. He may also run for president. He's doing a great job, I think, of trying to, you know, insulate the state and make sure that we're, you know, economically and socially okay. And the challenge, though, is that this version of the Republican Party, and really in my lifetime, the entire Republican Party, they want to use the federal government to impose a very radical, extreme, usually like Christian fundamentalist view of the world on everybody. So the Republican Party wants to tell you who you can or cannot marry. They want to tell you, you know, when and how many kids you can have, because like they want to regulate or ban. A lot of people want to ban like IVF. And like, I have a beautiful 6-year-old boy at home, And, you know, I only have him because of access to medical technology, because my wife and I have fertility challenges. They want to make all these decisions. If you're like a young man, they want to ban Pornhub. They want to regulate what type of content you can consume online. And I just find all of that to be really gross. And my view of it has kind of always been the government should leave people alone. But then the Republicans will go out there and argue. They'll say, we want a small government and we want a government that we can drown in a bathtub. And but they also argue that, and when they say that, they mean they don't want the government to provide any service to American people. They don't want to build roads and bridges. They don't want to give health care to people. They don't want to make sure that people can put food on the table. But they do want to make sure the federal government is big enough to tell local school districts who can or cannot play women's volleyball. So it's just,
Linda McMahon, right? WWE, right. Vince McMahon, who is just the most awful human being on the planet, or one of the top.
Just about.
No. Yeah. I don't. Yeah, not from what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot more worse. They're all unfortunately in your government, but.
Well, Linda McMahon.
I mean, honestly, it's amazing that Vince McMahon doesn't have a job in the government. So.
Yeah. But by the way, would have done.
Kayfabe politics right now. That's what it is. We're all just believing the lie.
And anyway, it's a great explanation, and thank you very much. Particularly given the time of day, and when are you running? It's great. If you can be this coherent at 3 a.m. or whatever time we dragged you up, that is fantastic. I can't be that coherent at midday, which is what it is now. Right now.
every time we reference it should get earlier.
Yeah, so exactly.
I think I said it's actually 6, and I said 5. Three. And
I it was interesting that you brought up the free speech stuff, because obviously this is something that Vance brought up with our Prime Minister, Starmer, being like, we're concerned about your free speech. But when you really dig into what it is about, it's that fundamental Christian viewpoint. It's about abortion. And that's what they seem to be really gunning for. It's almost like the beginnings of The Handmaid's Tale.
It's Rosemary's Baby, isn't it? That's what I was about to say. It's that film. It's really, really horrible. Yeah. And it's a lot worse for women than it is for men.
Yes, 100%. And women get
I'm getting very uncomfortable thinking about it. Yeah,
and not a lot of support. I mean, I'm becoming more and more aware about perimenopause and the menopause, and there's just no support for women, and yet that's 50% of the population in the UK. That to me says there's a part of the system in the UK that is misogynistic, even if it is detrimental to the economy, which is what governments obsess about. You know, getting people back into work, and yet there's no support, and there's no reason or rhyme for it other than a form of misogyny. And this, I've segued there a little bit, but the point I was trying to make was, I've just been in Europe, and I've been in London asking people about would they take a vacation to the United States, and a lot of people would say no, but they wouldn't come on camera, and the reason is because they want, like, they would consider being they would want to be able to go over to the United States or have that option. But they were so fearful about saying anything on camera, even my tiny little YouTube channel, they wouldn't come and say it, which I was like, when I then pointed out to them, Donald Trump has infringed on your ability to have free speech within Europe and the UK, which I thought was just fucking mind blowing that he could have that amount of influence. And yet he's complaining about the UK doing that to the US. Any thoughts from anyone on that?
Well, it makes his telling us that we've got to have chlorinated chicken pale into insignificance, Al. If he can control what we're saying, then of course he's going to control what we're going to eat and do and and kiss his ass.
I can't imagine that I'm going in the direction of the US anytime soon, given given what I've written online. But then I've gone through several years of being banned by the UK government or blacklisted. So I'm kind of, I'm used to this by now. It's like, it turns out that I'm not very good at keeping quiet when faced with wannabe authoritarians talking nonsense about my subject. And I kind of say, no, that's rubbish. It turns out, it's a fault in my character, but unfortunately it's going to keep me away from the US. I rather sense.
Damn you in telling the truth.
Well, there's no call for it, really. I don't know what makes me do that. Because I do look sometimes and think, you know what? I wonder how much money there is in being a grifter for the right and for regimes like this. I mean, maybe I could get a lot of money for just completely selling out my integrity. That's got to be a price.
The IEA, I'd say, David.
Well, I don't know what the price is. I mean, how much? Anybody know how much I get if I, to a parent, Mike? Do you know what can I be offered by Trump? What's the price here?
I mean, I would go Google Tulsi Gabbard's net worth and find out, because she has made an incredible amount of money in the last couple of years since switching parties. So I think they pay pretty well. I always joke with my wife when I have a bad day at work, or if I don't win a campaign that I want, I go, well, I could always just become a Republican grifter. You know, that's always the backup job. So it's good to have a fallback. I mean, I wouldn't blame anybody for being worried about coming to the United States, because it is, I think, a scary time. But I also don't think, like, if you came on a trip to the weekend to, like, New York or something, that you would be in danger. So I wouldn't say the situation is that bad.
You mean in danger whilst in New York, or in danger when you're coming through the border?
I think, like, if you were coming through customs at LaGuardia, I think you would be fine, you know? So I wouldn't worry about that so much. I mean, they are, though, taking actions to try to stifle free speech. And, like, you know, we have there's a couple of people that who were protesters and organizers for these anti-Israel, pro-Palestine rallies that we've seen at college campuses. And, you know, I'm not a radical pro-Israel guy, but I really dislike people flying like a Hamas flag. And I don't have a lot of respect for like that type of advocacy, but they are guaranteed by free speech and the First Amendment to have whatever views they have, whether I like them or not. The same as, like, at, you know, famously in Illinois, like, you know, there was a case where the neo-Nazis were
KKK,
you know, right, and the ACLU defended them. So, like, in the same way, I find that repugnant. You know, they're deporting green card holders because the green card holder says something that Donald Trump doesn't like, and that's messed up. And now they've claimed, and this is a repeated thing with Trump, they've claimed that this person was coordinating with Hamas and that they were coordinating terrorist activities. And if that's true, get them the hell out. But you got to show that to a judge. You got to go through due process. There's a judicial system in the United States, and they're not doing that. So this is the same thing with immigration. So they're kicking out people who are saying things that they don't like, and they're not showing evidence. They're kicking out people who they say are violent criminals, but they're not showing evidence. And now they want to target homegrown people, which, again, I just assume is like any American. And if you can just start deporting and removing any American you want out of the country and sending them to a dangerous El Salvadorian prison, now we're in huge trouble. And by the way, the only bit of evidence for the man that they're claiming is an MS-13 member is that he owns a Chicago Bulls hat. That's the only bit of evidence they've said. They've said that's a gang sign, a Chicago Bulls hat, which is the most
Michael Jordan
basketball team in the United States.
It's always been synonymous with violence.
Sure. I throw Michael Jordan in jail.
Yeah, obviously.
Have you seen how good he can dunk?
Phil
Jackson. Yeah.
I'm just briefly going off topic, though. You know, LaGuardia, you know, no, I spent a week, it felt like a week, trying to get to LaGuardia from downtown Manhattan. So you're saying that's not a problem if we come into LaGuardia. It's always a problem going to LaGuardia, as far as I'm concerned. It's, and whoever put an airport there, it's just like, oh my God, you know, don't do it.
I'll tell you, they've improved the congestion in New York City dramatically. And on top of it, they did a full, like, $100 million renovation of LaGuardia. It might be the nicest airport in America.
Oh, wow. So I might go back. That's the congestion charge in New York, isn't it? So I thought they were going to suspend that. But it's interesting. I was working in London, in central London, at the time we introduced the congestion charge here, and we were amazed by the effect it actually has. And it seems to have had the same effect as I read in Manhattan. So again, one of these policies, people, oh no, it's bad, you can't do that. Again, your friends in the Republicans on the right in the UK say government can't do that, but the government can tell Manhattan or London that it shouldn't have congestion charge. Well, what if it makes life nicer for the people who live there? You know?
Well, it's again, I mean, I think there's an existential crisis of, and you'll hear Democrats go, it's a constitutional crisis, and they're not wrong. But it's really just about the role of the federal government in our lives and the role of the federal government in states. And we have the most conservative Supreme Court in the history of the United States. They've made it very clear that states' rights are going to trump at everything. And so if states' rights trump at everything, then Democratic cities need to be more, or Democratic states need to be more aggressive in taking action to make the world the way we want it to be in the states that we live in. And so they're absolutely going to try to pass like a national abortion ban. Or, for example, on congestion pricing, Donald Trump signed an executive order to ban congestion pricing in New York City, which he has zero authority to do. So he sends out an executive order and he goes, we've ended congestion pricing. And then the governor of New York is like, no, you haven't. No, we're going to keep doing it. And like, we'll take you to court, but like, we're going to keep doing it. And you have no authority to stop us. And so the courts are going to settle these things in theory. And that's, by the way, assuming that Donald Trump will adhere to court rulings, which for the most part he has. But
the recent deportation,
he's
actually just completely ignored the Supreme Court.
Well, he's
and
arguing.
Then you had the guest on Piers Morgan. We're going to go back to that. Who was trying to advocate that because Trump was elected, he should be allowed to ignore the Supreme Court. To which you were like, you, I think he was born in India, became an American citizen and doesn't know the Constitution. How does that work? Like, well, it's deliberately designed to separate that powers. So yeah, you don't have a tyrannical government. And yet you've got someone advocating that because Trump's been voted in, he gets to ride roughshod over everything because he was elected in. And it's like, wow, you don't understand America or you're a Nazi.
Sounds like Brexit all over again now.
Yep. Go on, Mike.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. They are trying to argue that any judge that stops him from breaking the law is overturning a democratic election, right? That's literally, J.D. Vance said that yesterday on Twitter. Like, that is a J.D. Vance quote.
That's because he's a fucking Nazi moron. Like, why the fuck would you say that? Like,
I mean,
it's clearly, you've got a separation of powers. They don't want a tyrannical government. They don't want all power invested in one place. The Constitution has more about Congress than it does about the president or the Supreme Court. It clearly shows that Congress is where the power is meant to be held and that you've got a guiding person with the presidency. And then the Supreme Court's to sort of flesh out and sort of make sure that the Constitution is kept in power. And you've got these dickheads who are just literally saying, no, 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 fuck all of that. The president's been voted in, so he's in charge. And you're going, well, then in which case the governor of every state could turn around and say, sorry, this pissed me right off, like, watching that. The governor of every state is, like, supreme leader then. Is that what they're saying? Because they got elected in by that state. So that, I mean, what the fuck are they talking about? I know we're meant to be talking about tariffs as well, David, so we will be going on to that. Don't worry. Sorry, Mike.
But I mean, the language will be better when we do tariffs as well, you know?
Oh, so much fucking better.
I think my language will get worse when we talk about tariffs because I think they're so fucking stupid. You say, like, are the governors the supreme rulers of their states? Like, no, they're not. No. Because this administration wants to tell them what to do on everything, and they're withholding government spending. I mean, they're attacking the governor of Maine right now, which is our most northern state, because she is not going to ban, you know, trans athletes from competing in women's sports. Like, you can feel however you want to feel about that. But again, if the government's supposed to be small, if states are supposed to be able to decide, like, let Maine decide. And then in the next election, let Maine voters figure out whether or not that's something that they want to support or not. And so in the same way that, like, I can't tell Mississippi to do a bunch of stuff that I want to do. And when Obama was in office, there were plenty of times when we tried to pass, like, you know, an executive action on guns, and the court shut us down because we have the Second Amendment. And, like, I would like tighter, safer regulations on guns. I'm not an anti-gun person, but, like, I'd like to keep school shootings from happening. But I can't do the things that I want to do because the Supreme Court and other judicial nominees keep telling me that I can't. So it's got to work both ways. And I think what the Republicans haven't quite thought through is they're enjoying this first 100 days of Trump. And they've got this kind of cult mentality that, you know, Trump is dear leader and he can do whatever he wants. And by the way, I know that this is a small number of Republicans. Like, this is not the vast majority of people who voted for Trump. It's not the vast majority of my countrymen. In fact, there was a poll today, more like 65% of Americans are very concerned that Donald Trump thinks he's above the law. They voted him in to get cheaper groceries. And they were pissed at the Democratic Party for a bunch of stuff. And I think for good reason, frankly, we can get into that if you want to. But they didn't sign up for this. And the more that they push the envelope, they're going to reach a point of no return. And either they're going to get punished electorally in the midterms in the next presidential election, or they're going to have to go the whole way. And that's what scares me about going the whole way. Because at that point, it's violent, it's messy, it's horrible, it's people are fleeing and leaving. Then it's a concern, like, don't come here. You know, we're not there yet. Like, right now, they're just kind of like stretching the bounds of what's possible. And, you know, the Supreme Court ruling that Trump is not adhering to right now, what they're really doing is they're arguing that they won that case. They're saying we won and we only have to do this, which means we have to go back to the Supreme Court and get clarifying on what they have to do, which is kind of a normal thing, but it's still, frankly, shitty. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
Man, it's Mike jumped into trade and tariffs and inflation. I've got to take this jump now because you are going to get inflation getting worse, because if you're going to put a tariff on, you know, bananas, you're putting a tariff on bananas, which, you know, to the best of my knowledge, the US doesn't grow. There's probably some in Puerto Rico or something. You're putting tariffs on things that, by and large, the US doesn't even produce. Right. And, you know, tariff on things that you don't produce very much of. Where's that going to go? And, you know, I'm seeing this pivot now in, you know, in the way that's described. You know, well, there might be some short-term pain. Yeah, too right. There will be short-term if you're going to just charge all of it. And there's no sense of why he's doing tariffs other than Trump loves the word tariffs, apparently, and he's loved them for 40 years. And this is the problem as well with the UK or whoever doing a trade deal with the US. Well, Trump just says, I love tariffs. The people around him are trying to work out what on earth he means, and they've all got different views anyway. What kind of deal can you do with the US? It just seems that they're just on this thing of, I can do tariffs, so I'm doing tariffs, so I'm going to put things through. And yeah, sure.
So I mean, you've got to look at history. You know, I think he is rivaling Hitler. We've already said, you know, we're already saying that.
I think he'd like to.
What inflation did they have as Hitler came?
That was different because actually, you know, if he was going for the full-on kind of authoritarian thing, he wouldn't need to do the tariffs. The tariffs are genuinely, I believe in tariffs. I've loved tariffs for 40 years, and it's genuinely just a really dumb policy. You can argue about, I mean, I'm not a great fan of tariffs at all. You can argue about, you know, the role of tariffs, but Trump just loves tariffs. He is tariff man. He is put it all on with absolutely dumb. What did he take a week? You know, we had the scoreboard in the garden of, you know, which country was going to get what. Lasted a week before, you know, it was completely mad.
Two business days. That's how long all the tariffs lasted. Two business days.
Yeah, two business days. And, you know, but he's not withdrawn 90 days. So what are we looking at now? You're looking at tariffs on pharmaceuticals. So, you're cutting the funding for Medicaid or whatever, and then the government would have to pay more for imported pharmaceutical products because, and here's the bit about trade. Here's the sort of trade lecture. We've got an economic system in the last 30 years has grown up that we get more goods than ever before. We have more drugs than ever before. And that's in part because they're made all around the world. People have worked out how to make things a lot cheaper than they did before. That's why the big factories went, because in the olden days, you had one factory would make kind of, you know, all the drugs for an entire state or an entire country or whatever. Now you can get them from all different countries, different plants. Means we've got more and more products than ever before. And then you get Trump going, well, I don't want that. I want to go back to the 1950s, 30s, 70s, whatever decade he's going back to. You know, that's going to cost if he actually does it. And I think the interesting question is he actually going to do it? By the way, that cuts into the question of a UK-US trade deal. Is it going to be a UK-US trade deal? Let's wait and see whether we know, have a clue what the US actually wants, because right now we don't. Trump just says, I love tariffs. How can you have a trade deal with a guy who just says, I love tariffs? I have no idea.
Can I ask a quick question?
Why would you do a trade deal with this guy to begin with? I mean, he's proven to be...
Well, completely. I wouldn't.
Can't trust him.
Yeah, just a completely unreliable negotiator and trading partner. But David, to the point that you made earlier, and I have a bunch of these because I talk about this all the time. But like, you know, they're like, we're going to start making prescription drugs here in the United States. And I'm like, cool, great. It's probably not a bad idea. We should probably do more of that. Like, again, the nugget of it is probably like not wrong. And a lot of people agree with it. 75% of all the ingredients that go into the medicine that Americans consume comes from China. 75%. So I can't start growing all the things I need from China here in the United States because I don't have the climate. And so it's completely messed up. Like, people talk about bananas, but like, and bananas, like, listen, I love a good banana, but like, I can live without a banana. So like, maybe if you're telling me I'm going to have pain, but think about all the seniors and all the people who have to get all this medication, and those prices are going to skyrocket.
Coffee.
At a time when they're cutting Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security.
Yeah. And the serious point, you make the serious point, and I agree with that, though. You know, there are some things that countries are going to have to look at and say, look, you know, what do we actually really have to make at home? Or what should we know where we're getting it from? And people would have different answers for that. Some people would say, you know, we should get more of our food from domestically. Or some people say we've got to make cars. Personally, I put drugs, medicines right at the top of it. You know, that figure you give, 75% of the ingredients for drugs come from China. You know, that's a problem, you know, and I would actually accept that's a problem. So if you're doing this sensibly, you say, well, how do we get to the situation where we don't have to rely on China for that 75%? Some of it will, you know, we better have a strategy for working out what we're going to do domestically. Some of it will come from friendly countries. Not there are any friendly countries towards the US on trade at the moment because you're trying to screw us all. But, to that point,
like, look, if the plan is, and it's hard to tell what Trump's plan is because he's so chaotic and he can't articulate it. But like, let's say, for the sake of argument, the plan was to isolate China, which they say a lot. Mm-hmm. China is the global superpower, is the global leader in the world right now because they're creating new coalitions and new partnerships. They've got a trade deal with Japan and South Korea. All three of those governments fucking hate each other historically. But they're like, this is ridiculous. We're going to fight on this. You could say, okay, we're going to try to empower Vietnam, to be the trading and the manufacturing partner that we need, but that's great. Then they added tariffs on top of Vietnam. So it's like, there's no thorough process. Like, you could tell me that we were going to isolate China and a few other countries, and by doing that, we were going to bring together the EU, and we were going to bring together Canada and Mexico, and we were going to bring together a few partners, and you could do that trade war and win and execute it with a good plan. Us versus the world doesn't work, and it just continues to position China as a world leader. And on top of that, they completely gutted USAID, which is a program that most Americans don't understand. At a time when, you know, we feel like we can't get anything done here, we can't build a road or build a bridge to improve our communities, so why am I sending money to Africa? But the reason you send that money there is so that we can help people, which is good and altruistic, but we also want to have political and economic influence in those countries. Yep. So that they will do the things that we need to do. All the money that we pulled out of those countries isn't gone, and it didn't go back to the American people. It's now that China is spending money in Africa and in other places. So China has more influence. And does anybody in the Western world believe that the world is better off with China or Russia having more influence in global politics than America? As imperfect as America is, we're usually trying to be a force for good. We don't always get it right, but we're trying. And this guy doesn't understand that because he's dumb as rocks.
But it's that old, it's again, one of those classic tropes. People are made to think that it's either that or that as your choice, when it's actually, you've got both. It's just that you have to sort out either your growth as an economy or you have to sort out your tax system. And they don't want to deal with either, to be perfectly honest.
Can I just come in now and say that we're in danger of boys shouting over Liz, who I think might have some news she was a bit happier about with regard to the UK and the EU, which...
Well, yeah, I mean, look, at the moment we've got a government that's playing a game of riding two horses. And in fact, I spoke to Tom Wills this morning of Trade Justice Movement. We can't work out which horse is going to win right now. We've got this big news of dynamic alignment to the EU, which sounds so simple. It's not as simple as it is in reality, because of the mess that Brexit's created. And then, we've got this trade deal, which the Telegraph and the right wing are coming through, and GB News saying, Dan O'Hanlon's out there saying, yeah, we're going to have a great American trade deal. And we're going to have a facility to sort of say, not the hormone fed beef, but we're going to have high value US goods, which then won't grate on the deal with the EU. The two, I mean, David, you're the expert, but I don't think the two are deliverable. I think that if they go with the USA trade deal with that proviso, it will be the same as me giving my dog's worming tablet in a nice big lump of cheese. Because if they let that in, the bad stuff will come in. We've already got illegal stuff coming in from Rotterdam in goodness knows how much quantities. And it'll be the beginning of the end. And also, in terms of sovereign decisions, you know, when Tony Blair decided to go into the Iraq war, polling was showing 67% of the public wanted to go get Saddam. If they don't give a parliamentary scrutiny of these decisions, then you're looking at Keir Starmer really being responsible for a decision with his whip to deliver a big trade decision between EU and the USA, when polling is showing somewhere between 14% and 20% are backing the American trade deal, which is really bizarre. So if he wants to be re-elected, I would imagine that he's not going to go with the American trade deal. I don't believe you can have both. I think it's impossible.
I've got a follow-up question to that as well for David. Where does Northern Ireland land? Is it under because under the my reading of the Windsor framework is Northern Ireland would be in the single market, so EU trade barriers. But yeah, you correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Let me just pick up a few things there. First of all, just to note that J.D. Vance, in his eminent wisdom, these guys are all stupid, but in his eminent wisdom, he actually blamed Europe for the invasion of Iraq going wrong. No, he said that Europe didn't push back enough on the US. So,
wait, what? I didn't see that. Really?
Yeah, it was in an interview a couple of days ago. So,
oh my god,
that's number one.
Can I do a side rant real quick? Because this happens to like everything in American politics. I'm sure it happens really everywhere. The smoothing over of history. And I love every time I see like a Democrat post like a clip of George W. Bush not being a total D-bag, even though he was like a pretty, in my opinion, he was a terrible president. And I actually think he was a worse president than Trump, which is a whole other side conversation if you ever want to get into it. Mm-hmm. But it's funny because I'm thinking like 20 years from now when like, I don't know who's president, like Ron DeSantis Jr. is president. And, you know, and people are going to be like, here's this clip of Donald Trump. Look how great and nice he was. You know, I can't handle it. And that's the type of stuff that drives me crazy. Like we drove into a ditch to invade Iraq and J.D. Vance is like, that was Europe's fault. You know, Tony Blair.
Thanks for that thought. That's terrible. Yeah. I'm just going, a purely sidetrack, given Northern Ireland was mentioned in Ireland. You know, I always see those pictures of Chicago during St. Patrick's Day of the rivers or the canals being turned green. And I just wondered whether your jacket, Mike, actually, you know, was put in the water when it was green in St. Patrick's Day. It actually started white.
No, but I love turning the river green on St. Patrick's Day. It's the most American thing ever. Let's pollute the shit out of our water. Just for the sake of it.
So, I mean, just on the trade, I come back to Northern Ireland in a minute. On the trade, look, it looks like at the moment the UK government has chosen in a sort of quiet way. So the way the UK works is we have to sort of be slavishly, sound like we're slavishly devoted to the US. We have to, you know, we find that you're a sensitive bunch in the US. You like to think that we love you, and of course we do. So our governments kind of overdo the special relationship.
Sucking up.
You can use those words. But, but I'm pretty sure this government has chosen, you know, to strengthen trade ties with the EU, which after all is next door. And so, you know, any sane government
and our food security
would say that the market next door was more important than a distant one. I mean, not if you're the US where you apparently want to invade Canada, whatever. No, I think they've chosen the EU. I don't think we're going down the US food line. Clearly, you know, you're going to have a discussion with the US about whatever the US actually wants to talk about. In reality, most of the beef we import, the US is not going to send beef to the UK because Ireland has mostly sewn up the market anyway for beef here. You're not going to send the chlorinated chicken because actually we produce most of our own chicken. There's not that much cost difference in chicken production anyway. So this is all a sidetrack, but you know, hey, that's what happens with these things. So I'm pretty sure.
David, have you just gone mute, or is it me?
Yeah, it's gone quiet. Yeah.
Yeah, David, you've gone quiet. Russians.
Well, not according to my screen. How am I doing?
You're back.
Gotcha. Right. I was temporarily taken out by the Association of Chlorinated Chicken Producers. No, I don't think the US is going to send us any food, and I don't think we're going to do that deal with the US. We're going to do that deal with the EU. Makes complete sense. We'll try and do a deal with the US if we find out what the US this US administration wants, which is probably pointless because the next day Trump will want something else and he'll denounce the deal and do something else. You know, I think we'll get around it. I think that as compared to where we were, you know, or maybe I'm coming back to Mike's point that, you know, it's like, you know, you look back. I mean, as compared to where we were, you know, we were in a terrible spot on trade. You're far better with this government, even it being a bit tentative each way. At least it's sane government. You know, I didn't agree with everything. Sorry, Mike. I didn't agree with everything the Biden administration did.
I didn't either.
But it was sane. You know, and so the Starmer government is sane. Ultimately, the Trump administration is not sane.
Can I add a thing? Because you brought up chicken, and I think this is an important part of the tariff war that we probably need to acknowledge. America doesn't have a lot of chickens right now. This is a huge issue.
Yeah, it's got a flu problem.
Exactly. And by the way, the bird flu has jumped to other animals in the United States too. So our meat production and our egg production is all messed up, and we're importing like a ton of eggs temporarily from South Korea, I think, which temporarily dropped egg prices. And then we ran out of the supply immediately. And now egg prices are back to like $8. So this is the problem.
And you're cutting spending for kind of research into all of this stuff as well.
Sure. Right. Well, we also cut research into Alzheimer's. So I need somebody to explain to me why it's not important for the federal government to research a cure for Alzheimer's, which just anyway.
That's the kind of thing they've got a good example to test. Donald Trump.
That's it. Might I don't want to diagnose somebody from here, but I think that might be more dementia, and we should be researching that too.
hat on a hat there. The United States shows us why the intensification, the factory intensification model, is really bad news, and it's not good for food security. And our sustainable way of farming is definitely the best way forward, and it needs support to survive. But, that's where the Labour government are lagging at the moment.
I didn't get answer from David over Northern Ireland. Where does it land?
So the answer is that exports. Northern Ireland to the US will be according to whatever the UK does. If the EU takes retaliatory action, Northern Ireland will get affected. It's all a bit confused, but if the UK and the EU do a deal on food and drink, that will remove a lot of the differences between the Great Britain and Northern Ireland. So kind of it will help, but it's always, you know, there's always a bit of ambiguity in Northern Ireland as to the politics, the economics. That's fine as it happens there. At the moment, again, same government, at the moment, that's being worked through. The ambiguity that's been there since the Good Friday Belfast Agreement, that continues to be there. We're kind of fine, we're not fine, but it works well enough.
How long, David, do you think it'll take for the SPS, if we go down this route, how long do you think it'll take for the SPS agreement to actually come into action?
Can you explain what that is to our viewers, Liz?
Food and drink agreement to align food and drink standards between the UK and the EU, and this will take a long time. It could take easily 2 or 3 years to negotiate and kind of 5-10 years to actually implement, because these things take a long time, because there are lots of little details. Liz will know there's lots of regulation. Every food and drink stuff is basically regulated around the world, so much for small government or whatever. And, you know, there are issues where something in the UK wouldn't quite work if it was according to the EU law, and there are all manner of kind of, you know, carve outs and derogations. And so all this stuff, and this is where it comes back to the US as well. It's like, you know, all these demands of, you know, we want our way of doing things or no way of doing things. It's like, look, this is a global issue. We're always talking to each other about all of these kind of issues. And you've got the US popping up going, you're the only ones who impose barriers. We don't impose any barriers at all. It's like, you know what? You can't get a really nice Scottish haggis in the US. It's banned. Why is it banned? No evidence has ever, in fact, been presented for why it's banned. It sounds a bit icky, so it's banned. So we, you ban haggis, we ban clarinet chicken. But yeah, it will take a long time to actually work through all of the issues for this. But I guess, frankly, they're going to have to try and get an agreement in place before the election, because, as you say, look, the opinion polls say 50% or 60% or whatever it is want these sorts of deals to be done with the EU. So these sorts of deals will be done, and it's not crossing red lines, not rejoins, not customs union, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just a food and drink agreement.
Haggis is banned in the US.
Sorry, what was the question?
Haggis is banned. I don't know what you were about to go into. Haggis is banned. Kinder eggs are banned. You know,
Kinder eggs aren't banned. There's Kinder eggs here.
That's Kinder, no, but not with a
toy in it.
Not with a toy in it. We have
We have Kinder. We have Kinder eggs with a toy in it. My son asked me when we go to the gas station.
Okay, maybe they unbanned that one. Your progress is finally being made.
Can I talk about something that I think should be banned in Europe though, which is the screw tops with the little plastic that like refuses to come up? So I can't take my top off the can. Like, if you implemented that in America, society would collapse. It would collapse. People would not be able to handle it. I got used to it. I was just in Italy for spring break with my family. And I got used to it. I'm fine with it. But like, I was just imagining, like, we can't handle paper straws in America. If you implemented that here, I like complete civil.
I'm sorry. If we're talking about things that need to be banned, I mean, I see your plastic thing, but I'm sorry. There's no excuse for Bud Light. I'm sorry. If we're talking about things that need to be banned.
Listen, I drink Guinness. All right. I'm half Irish. It's water to me. And I love it. So it's four ingredients.
Right. We're finishing this in terms of bans. You see, this is the trade negotiations we need.
The next time we're doing this, first of all, it's going to be nighttime for me and morning for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's midnight. He's doing it at midnight. He's only been asleep for an hour.
It's yesterday.
Like, Mike, I want to know, how did you get around the bottle top?
How did I get around? I just learned to live with it. Like,
yeah.
Is this the new plastic thing where you take the lid off and it won't come away from the...
Some of them are impossible to rip off, though. And it's like some pain. I don't mind it. Once I wrap my head around it, I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, I can figure it out. When I started, the first time I was like, I thought I broke the top. I was like, okay, I broke it. What is this? And then I realized it was intentional.
You know that just going back, I just want to go back to the haggis very quickly. You know, there was a cartoon that was quite popular in the 90s that said that haggis was the most disgusting thing ever invented. It was called Earthworm Jim, and it was a reoccurring joke that you don't go near haggis. And it's interesting that you said it was banned, and I was like, What's that about? I know that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles caused anchovy sales to drop as well, because they kept saying how disgusting anchovies were. And then here's the third one. When Popeye was big and famous, he increased spinach sales during World War II. Like, so I just wondered if the haggis sales had been caused as a result of Earthworm Jim and his cartoon campaign to get rid of haggis and make it one of the most disgusting things ever.
I think haggis should be banned because it's disgusting. And I think that the federal government should provide British Guinness pies to everyone, because I love Guinness.
I agree on the haggis. Yeah, you know, it doesn't tempt me.
Okay, the Kinder Egg ban was lifted year before last. There you go, 2 years ago. You could finally get Kinder Eggs in the US. I missed this at the time.
The other thing, just a couple of European exports I'd like to take, I think, because I've been to Paris. I think that all Americans should be carrying baguettes at all times, because it seems like every Frenchman I ran into carrying a baguette. I think we should have Sunday roast. We should bring that back. And I think we should have 3-hour-long dinners at trattorias like in Italy. So, like, the food situation in America is, I know I'm a big guy, so, like, it feels wrong for me to talk about food like this. But, like, and I used to weigh 600 pounds, and now I only weigh about 350. I've lost a ton of weight to continue to do the work. But, like, I love a good culinary experience. And in America, a culinary experience is so expensive. And in Europe, I could walk into, like, in Italy, I could walk into any random trattoria, have the best trattoria. I'm probably saying it wrong because I'm a dumb American. But, like, I could walk into any restaurant and have the best meal of my life, and then they'll hand me a check, and it's $8. And I'm like,
it's nothing.
That is the quintessential difference between America and Europe. And Britain's at risk of losing what we've only really enjoyed since we joined the European Union, which is good food. Before we joined the European Union, we had white bread, Spam, and that mash get smash and bird's trifle. And that was about all we lived on. And steak fried in lard, frozen steak from Argentina.
Well, I might just go down my local supermarket. I can get instant mash based on Idaho potatoes, one of the few US products that I can get in my local supermarket. So there we go. Maybe I should do that now for my lunch or dinner or whatever time zone I'm in.
No, don't do it. Ugh.
I'll add to this too, and maybe it's my final thought on this podcast, because I think we're coming up to time. But there's a professor, Scott Galloway, at the University of Berkeley, and he talks about a lot of economic issues. And one of my favorite quotes that he's ever said is that America is an amazing place to make money, and one of the least satisfying places to spend it. And Europe is kind of like one of the more challenging places to make money, but one of the most satisfying places to spend the money. So he's like, when you're young in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, make money in America and then immediately get out and go to Europe. I'm not entirely sure that's wrong.
That's very good. That's the idea. Europe is basically a heritage theme park for the Americans.
thank you for your service.
Pleasure.
Yeah. I asked a question.
We have bailed you out of a few jams historically. You know, I can think of like one, maybe two.
I have to admit, like, I lived in Sicily for about 9 months, and it was amazing to have a coffee for a euro. And you get it was cheaper to go to a restaurant and get a pizza freshly made than it was to go and get it from the supermarket. And you went, wow, there's something. They've got something quite right. I am in the last show that you were on, Mike. I made a prediction that Trump's going to lose the midterms. I think
with all available evidence, that's the safest bet for a couple of reasons. One, Americans prefer divided government almost exclusively. Even if they like the government, they still want it to be divided, which I actually think is the worst instinct of the American electorate, but that's maybe a topic for another time. But also, he's unpopular. Like, they're gaslighting people into this belief that he won with a massive mandate. He won the election by 185,000 votes in 3 states. Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris was very close to winning the Electoral College and losing the popular vote. And so my expectation is we're going to run better candidates in this election. We're going to be on much friendlier terrain. Democratic voters always vote in midterm elections. We are high propensity voters. Republican voters are not. Donald Trump has always struggled in midterm elections. So unless he's like massively popular, or there's something that changes the scale of the electorate, which I don't know what that would look like, I think we're the odds-on favorite. Now, I don't think we'll take back the Senate, simply because the Senate map is very difficult. Only about a third of the Senate is up every 2 years. And the third of the Senate that's up is not very friendly to Democrats. We need to win 4 seats to take sole control of the Senate back. And we probably have a chance at 2 of what you would call a tier 1 Senate race, which means it's like the most competitive. And we have to defend a few of those on our own side. And then there's like no tier 2s. You get down to tier 3, and it's like Alaska and Iowa, which are harder places to win. We could do that if there was like a complete economic collapse, which, you know, flip a coin.
Fingers crossed.
Well, You might get China invading Taiwan. Maybe that's how he did it, like Margaret Thatcher did with the Falkland Islands. You never know.
I mean, I think it'd be hard to get Americans to care about that right now. They don't care about Ukraine, which is kind of a bummer. Not all of them, but like a lot of them don't.
David, is there any chance
in the States right now is like our infrastructure is crumbling, people are struggling, like we need to support people here. And it would take a more skilled communicator, in my opinion, than Donald Trump to convince the American people that we need to continue to spend money overseas. Because that's the one thing where like I get his argument. I don't agree with it. But like Joe Biden didn't do a very good job of framing the Ukraine war as in the best interest of the American public. And we need a new generation of leader to be
it's
able to
It's almost weird right? Because all the previous wars during the Cold War, they were pretty damn good at advertising, at least initially, about going in there and protecting democracy. And this decade seems to have been where it's completely floundered, even though this is probably more justifiable than, you know, Vietnam, for example, off the top of my head, or in the Middle East.
Or Iraq. It's one of my criticisms of the Biden administration. I think that they did not do a very good job of framing the war and explaining it. And some of that is due to, frankly, Joe Biden's health and age and his ability to utilize the presidential bully pulpit. I feel the same way about inflation in the United States, which is like inflation was improving and cooling, but we didn't have a spokesman for the like people talk about how, and Liz, you asked this question earlier. They're like, who's the leader of the Democratic Party? Where's the spokesman for the Democratic Party? No offense to Joe Biden, who I love and appreciated his service. We have not had a spokesperson for the Democratic Party since Barack Obama, basically, in my view.
Yeah.
Maybe for 1 year when Joe Biden was actively running for president in the middle of the pandemic, but we really haven't had one. And that's a problem. It's also why Donald Trump's very deft use of the presidential bully pulpit was so alarming to liberals in the last, 80, 90 days, because this is actually what a presidential bully pulpit looks like. This is how Obama used the pulpit. Now he used it for stuff that we liked, but Trump can capture attention simply because he's president, and Joe Biden couldn't execute on that a lot of the time. And that's a problem. And so that's why he got kind of hid. And we're going to need to solve for that. And we need to make sure that the next Democratic president we elect, God willing, can do that work, that we can drop him in the middle of a 3-hour podcast with Joe Rogan to go explain what they want to do, that they can do a press conference, they can do
Sunday roast.
A TikTok video.
Go with Pete. Go Pete.
Sunday roast.
Go Pete. I love Pete.
Pete.
I don't think that people understand how deep the bench of talent is on the Democratic side. Like, I think like the top 10 or 12 candidates are stellar. We have a ton of governors who are amazing. If we want to go outside of Washington, we have Pete, who is like an enigma into himself. We have Cory Booker. We have AOC. We're in an okay spot. And we just have to have a question of like, what does the Democratic Party stand for? How are we going to help people and provide immediate impact on their lives? How are we going to shut out the culture, social issues that like dominate the headlines, but like most people don't actually care about? Like I saw a stat the other day that blew my mind, which was like there are twice as many kids with measles right now in Texas than there are trans athletes trying to play women's sports at the high school level.
Wow.
Yeah, the discourse is so loud on this issue. And again, a lot of people are going to feel a lot of different ways about it. But like, I want to keep kids safe and I want to make sure that everybody can enjoy their childhood. And I want to make sure people can put food on the table. And we've gotten so far away from just being able to improve people's lives. And I'm on my soapbox now, so I'll stop. But it's just...
Going back to the question about the midterms, David, is there anything that Trump could do with the tariffs to then boost the economy to make it look like it's on a rebound and heading in the right direction? Or is that damage from the tariffs just permanent?
If you look at the length of economic cycles, given that the midterms will be in, if my maths are right, about 18 months, given that you're headed, likely forecasts suggest you're headed into a recession second half of the year, you may be growing by the time of the midterms, but the chances are against it. So essentially, you're kind of setting the economic cycle against your political cycle in the way you're handling tariffs now. And it looks to me, there's loads of evidence about people cutting back on spending, people cutting back on investment in the US. You're doing a slowdown. I don't think you get the speed up again in time for the midterms. And anyway, as Mike said, it's like about 3 seats have to change hands in the House. And I'd be given midterm trends of Trump, I'd be amazed if that didn't happen. It almost always happens that there's that kind of tilt to the non-presidential party at midterms.
Liz, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, I hope that, and I don't know that much about American politics, but I'm assuming that you start campaigning for those midterms a lot earlier than we do for our local elections, which tend to sort of start 3-4 months before the election. But I'm guessing over there, you must start gearing up for it fairly soon, I should think.
We're doing it now. Like, yeah. I mean, not every race is filled, but like, you know, again, my broader, more limited understanding of UK politics, like there's a much broader coordinated campaign between the party. No, in our system, it's, you know, 10,000 campaigns are getting launched, you know, every day for House, for Senate, for local races. So that is a cascading effect that's playing out right now. And you have primaries in the United States for like competitive House races, where there's like 12 candidates in it. Cause like every local elected official is like, here's my shot to get to Congress. So we have a lot of like party infighting. And then we have a lot of like, you know, conversations about the future of the Democratic Party. Are we going to go more left? Are we going to go more center? What kind of style are we going to go for? So like, you're going to see that fight play out in these primaries everywhere.
I'm going to stick with my prediction. I think he's going to lose both houses. I'm going to stick with that. And it's based on historical, I think it was McKinley tariffs and the Smoot-Hawley. Both of those caused both houses to be lost by the president. So I'm going to stick with that. Anyway, on that note.
It's fine, but then you have to find me an Iowa Senate candidate, please. So okay. That would be great. We're going to run you best. For Iowa Senate, okay?
Okay.
No residency. You just show up and run. So.
On that note, thank you very much to our guests. Thank you very much to my co-host. If you got this far in the video, hit that like and subscribe button. Once again, thanks for listening. Hail to the lamp. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hail to the lamp. Bye.
From the files of Police Squad.
Last time he asked me if I'd rather be married to like Nigel Farage or JD Vance or something like that. And I think I chose Farage. That's how much I hate JD Vance.
Oh, that's actually gotten worse. Have you changed your mind on that?
No.
No.
I can't.
You haven't met Nigel Farage though. I have.
I've actually met Nigel Farage. He comes to the States more than a few times. I'm not a fan, but he ain't JD Vance.
He smokes.
Nigel Farage is closer to death. That's my belief.
He smokes and drinks.
Vance, I'd be married to that prick for 50 years. I get 20 years of Farage, most. Half of it, he's a potato.
Liz.
Oh, here we go. I'm ready.
Okay, yeah. To get a EU-UK trade deal over the line, you are going to have to sell the Peak District to Donald Trump or the Cotswolds to Elon Musk. Oh. Who do you sell to?
Well, I live in the Cotswolds, so it's going to be the Peak District. That was easy, Al.
Okay.
Sorry, Peak District, sorry.
Yeah, that was a bit.
I'm being selfish there.
But yeah, I mean, you have given it over to Trump. I don't know which one's really worse. Because you don't have to deal with Musk. You'd have to, like, you'd probably have, like, Teslas roaming free in the countries.
Okay, yeah, let me think about this a bit more. Oh, God.
This is Donald Trump converting it into one giant golf course.
Yeah, but as you said, Donald Trump, he might not have that long to go. He's, you know, he's going to meet he's going to meet his maker at some stage, unless Elon Musk finds the answer to longevity. Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Henry Kissinger lived forever. So, I used to joke that Henry Kissinger was Dick Cheney's last Horcrux, and then he died, and Dick Cheney's still alive. So I have no more bits.
I mean, Trump's already in Scotland anyway. Tony Ferry goes down to Peak District. Yeah,
expands his empire. David, to secure the UK rejoining the EU, you will have to agree within that deal that either Nigel Farage, Donald Trump, or Boris Johnson our prime minister again for one term of the UK. Obviously, Donald Trump, you know, hasn't been before, but yeah, who do you pick?
Well, I've never actually campaigned for the UK to rejoin. Never campaigned to leave or stay either, because I was a neutral civil servant. But it's a very easy question actually, because one of those people named is the most pro-European leader you could possibly have. It happens to be Boris Johnson. Just so happens he had to go against himself. He bloody grew up in Brussels. His father was an EU-crat, Eurocrat. So, you know, the fact he's personally chaotic and whatever, and lousy leader, you know, in every other respect, you know, he's actually, you know, he had to go against himself in order to be prime minister of the party, and he did. Whoever the other people you gave me know.
Farage and Donald Trump.
No.
You think Boris is Boris Johnson's the lesser of those three.
Yes. The lesser of the three, yeah.
Yep.
I agree.
Wow. Okay. Mike.
Hit me.
Three candidates for president in the United States, but they're all AI generated, which means they get to rerun, but they're a combination of candidates. You've got Barack Obama mixed in with Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
You've got Nixon mixed in with JFK. Or you've got RFK Jr., who's not mixed in with anyone, but I thought I'd just throw that.
Well, he's mixed in with the worm that's in his brain.
Who is your presidential candidate?
Yeah. I think the liberal instinct is to go with Ronald Reagan and Barack Obama because they're so noble. But I'm gonna go with Nixon and JFK because Nixon, while famously a criminal, was actually a pretty good president on the merits, both domestically and internationally. I'll take that bet. So I'm gonna have to deal with, like, you know, some womanizing and some wiretaps, but we're gonna get some shit done. So I'm fine with it.
At least he didn't grab people by the pussy.
I mean, when you're famous, they, you know.
Anyway. Well, JFK, I think, grabbed them well everywhere, actually, insofar as one reads.
Thanks, everyone.
I'm just imagining that this hypothetical candidate still looks like Nixon, though. So, yeah. Whoa! But, like, it's the same kind of, like, horn dog as JFK. Hello, Maryland. It's a very bad.
Go into people's houses and wreck up the place.
Well, my favorite, I don't know, my favorite Richard Nixon moment is vastly underrated, is that there was a scandal in Eisenhower's reelection campaign that a wealthy donor bought, and he did other stuff, but he bought a dog for Richard Nixon, and it was like a corruption scandal. So that's how far we've come. And Richard Nixon had to do a TV ad to explain it that they aired on TV. And it's this slow pan in on Richard Nixon where you see him petting his dog. He's like, "Hello, you may have seen something in the news about me getting a dog from our old dear friend." And it's like that. And then he goes, "The dog was for my kids. We named him Checkers and we're going to keep him." And he's like, "And I'll never stop fighting for America." And then it just cuts out. And I was like, that's an incredible ad. I'm obsessed with it. So all the time in my brain, I'm like, his name is Checkers.
I need to look that one up.
Yeah. And now we have Trump. So that's, you know, what's it going to be like in 20 years?
Fucking who knows. Right. Bye.
Bye. Cheers. Good.